Welcome to the Segregationist Papers Podcast, where these gems are rated E for everybody. You know?
Now I'm popped up twice, drank on ice, high beams on, forever top flight, by high flow, cabin pressure low, watching out for traffic control. I'm Clifford landing. I'm Clifford landing. I'm Clifford landing.
Yo, what's good, family out here on the Empowerment Frequency? Welcome to episode 8 of the Segregationist Papers Podcast. Thank y'all for tuning in once again this week so that we can once again build and get this week started off on the right foot. If you haven't already, please make sure you take a moment to stop by iTunes to subscribe and write a review for the cast. Do the same if you're on Google Play, and, you know, if you're on Android and you don't have either one of those, then SoundCloud's available for your listening pleasure as well. Today's guest will be Stephen Grant. He's the creator of NoirBnB.com, and he's going to be on to help y'all get your travel game up, all right? Speaking of travel, I just got my passport today, and of course, the passport office messed my name up. Like, bruh, how you confuse a damn E with a G? Like, I'm just not seeing it, especially when you got the birth certificate right in front of you. Like, really, fam? Like, what's really good? I'm guessing that somebody was in the office and they were like, oh, he trying to get out of here because Trump president. Let's go ahead and put the game on hard mode for him. So, you know, it is what it is. But anyway, let's go ahead and get to the interview, which is coming up next. So y'all get ready to bag these gems up. Today's guest is the creator of NoirBnB.com, a black-friendly alternative to Airbnb. He's also a founder of DopeSense88.com, which is a record label, publishing company, and branding company. He's a self-described creator, entrepreneur, and humanist. So let's welcome to the Segregationist Papers Podcast, Mr. Stephen Grant. Steph, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you for the opportunity. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. We're glad to have you on the show, man. So let's go ahead and get right into it. Tell us a little bit about your background, you know, born and raised, school, any kind of professional things you got going on right now.
Yeah, man. So I was actually born in Jamaica. I moved to South Florida in 1995, kind of grew up here from 95 to 2006. Mm-hmm. Then I moved to Los Angeles, lived out there for a year, and then moved to Washington, D.C. in like 07, 08, and lived out there up until a couple months ago. So yeah, man, been all over.
Yeah, man. It's funny too. It's like, man, I keep running into, you know, Jamaican people. One of my buddies, his dad is Jamaican. There's another guy I interviewed earlier. His pop is Jamaican. So it's like, man, I keep running into all these Jamaicans, man. It's like y'all got that hustler spirit, man.
Hey, man, we out here, man. You know, I mean, it's like the In Living Color skit. You know, they got mad different jobs. You know what I mean? So we always all over the place. Yeah, man.
I feel it. That's what's up. So, kind of going into, you know, NoirBnB, how has the idea of comfort and familiarity influenced your life?
I mean, I think it's kind of been kind of on both sides, right? I mean, one, I kind of have, just my life, I've kind of been a person who, lives in a lot of different places, or has lived in a lot of different places, and also kind of wears many hats and does a lot of different things. So I feel like in a lot of ways, kind of stepping out of my comfort zone and being in a lot of different places and being in a lot of unfamiliar spaces has helped to, give me a unique worldview in a lot of ways, right? But I think that having places where you are comfortable and being in spaces around people that you can really kind of relate to and understand on a different level is really important as well. It kind of makes us who we are, right? So I think it's a bit of both, and that partially is what inspired me to even start the company.
Cool. So outside of those two things, who would you say is your biggest influence thus far, and why?
Man, I've got a lot of influences. I'd say if I had to name two top influences, it'd probably be Jay-Z and Marcus Garvey.
Interesting. Okay. Talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, I feel like it would be remiss of me to not do Marcus Garvey first, but I kind of got to, right? So, I mean, Marcus Garvey, just in general, one, besides the fact that he was, you know, he's a legendary Jamaican, and we learned about him as kids growing up in Jamaica, I think just as a figure, I mean, in a lot of ways, he's kind of the father of a lot of the civil rights movements that we know today, whether it be the NOI or the civil rights movement, 5 percenters, like mm-hmm. just different stuff like that, right? But I think his message was just, you know what I mean, like one God, one nation, one destiny. And I feel like that's kind of, that was just very important. I feel like he kind of saw the way that things were and realized that as Black people, we kind of have to unite on a lot of levels. So not just socially, but culturally, economically, politically, and media-wise. I mean, of course, the UNIA was like a publishing machine that was around the world in a variety of different languages and stuff like that. So right. I feel like to be able to, and it's kind of a monumental feat to get so many Black people around the world in one accord that way, right? And to work together and build something that huge in the 20s and 30s, I mean, to me, it was probably amazing then, but even right now, that's an even more amazing feat to me. So I just respect what he did and what his mission was, just to help help Black people get to where we need to be and kind of reclaim our natural place among nations. But Jay-Z, I mean, like, what is there to say that really hasn't been said already? I mean, one, to be a dude from Brooklyn, come from very humble beginnings, and then, you know, I mean, like, kind of do his thing in the street for a few different years, but also take that and transition that into something positive. Like stacked up his money, was wise in a lot of economic ways. Right. Had his homies link up and kind of get together, and they invested that in the Rockefeller Records.
Right.
You know, made a deal with Def Jam, and I feel like they really just they made the game come to them in their own terms, right?
Right.
And I feel like to be a Black man in these modern times right now and really like come through all of the different adversities, and now not only have you overcome a lot of adversities, you can provide opportunities for others who look just like you and really just like motivate a lot of different guys. So I feel like just those two guys kind of like represent the two sides of the coin of what I want to do.
Dope, super dope, super dope. Yeah, man, Jay is actually, you know, I look at, when we talk about like Black entrepreneurship, I look at like Jay and Magic Johnson at this point.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
They've really reinvented themselves as far as like, you know, Magic being the basketball player, and then, you know, Magic, you know, having AIDS forever.
Yeah.
And then Jay, you know, being the dope dealer, and then eventually parlaying that into his own record label, and then now he's got this venture capital fund started up.
So, yeah,
you know, it's nice to see that progression, and I think that's something that we should all strive towards. So as far as like every, you know, 5 to 7 years, we should be reinventing ourselves. We should really be putting ourselves on a different platform, and
without a doubt,
and ascending to something else. So that's dope. That's dope. So speaking of economics and business, talk about Noir B&B and how you got into wanting to create it, what Noir B&B is, kind of what the vision for it is. Just kind of go through that for us.
Yeah, so to kind of give you a little backstory, in 2015, we were in Atlanta for the A3C Music Festival, and I had a show that I kind of helped put together and I was hosting.
Okay.
So while we were there, we rented like a really dope house off Airbnb. And it's me and a few homies staying there, and it's a really dope spot. And like, I was actually the first person to get that. I got to like hours before everybody else, so I was just there kicking and vibing, chilling for a little bit. Mm-hmm. The rest of the homies showed up that night. We kicked their thing. We all got some food and just vibed out. And then the next morning, we woke up. We're kind of getting our sets together for the show that night. And next thing you know, like, the cops knock on the door, and they had their guns drawn and the whole thing. So we
were like,
yeah, it was a really crazy situation. So we were like, yo, what's going on? And the cops told us, they were like, yeah, well, we got a call from the neighbor saying that the place is being robbed, right? So just a house full of Black people really kind of kicking and vibing, and they assume we're robbing the place, right? So mind you, I'm in like sweats, I got slides on, like I'm not even looking like anybody who's about to be any type of hurt.
Right.
So we showed them that we were there legally and all that, and they were still kind of like looking around and make sure everything was straight. But kind of in the beginning of the ordeal, I asked one of the cops, so I was like, hey, is it cool if I Snapchat this? And he was like, yeah, sure, as long as you get my good side, right? So So I started Snapchatting the whole thing. And then once they got the all clear, once we got the all clear, they were about to head out. And I was like, hey, before you guys bounce, is it cool if I get a selfie real quick? So they were like, yeah, sure. So me and my homie took a photo with the two police officers, and they dipped out.
Mm-hmm.
So as they left, like, I posted it on Twitter. I was like, yo, the Airbnb we're staying at is so nice. the neighbors thought we were robbing the place. So like, I posted that on Twitter and really just joking, right? And the whole thing kind of went viral. And one of my homies hit me and was like, yo, like, you know, this is about to go crazy, right? And I mean, I didn't really think that much of it, but next thing you know, like, it just kind of caught fire. So we ended up kind of getting a lot of responses from different media outlets like BuzzFeed, a lot of different publications just trying to get our story and get the whole interview. So it kind of blew up that way. And then we were looking on social media, and I can't remember whether it was like Boston, but I think it might have been the Shade Room. They posted my tweet and they kind of were talking about Airbnb, and there were a lot of people in the comments. They were kind of just like, well, some of them were like, well, that's crazy. I would never use Airbnb again. It's a terrible story. Mm-hmm. And some people were just like, well, what is that? I've never even heard of that before, right? So it's kind of a 50-50 thing. So a lot of people were also hitting me kind of being like, well, I'm just glad you guys were safe because it could have went way left and it could have been a really dangerous situation.
Right.
They were right, but at the same time, like, that wasn't even something that I was thinking about initially. Although, I mean, I kind of knew it. Just being as a black man, of course, you know, police interactions, they can always go left.
Oh, yeah.
But my mentality about things is just always try to spin it or make it as positive as possible, right? Or, like, if it starts out in the wrong way, at least try to find some way to shift it in a positive direction. Right. So, or at least defuse the situation. So, like, that's kind of what I was trying to do. But just throughout the fallout of the whole situation kind of let me know, like, well, there's a lot of black people who, one, have no idea about this even, like, that this service even exists, one. And two, there are a lot of black people around the world who just wouldn't even feel comfortable just based on the situation. So it kind of hit me. It was like, you know what? Well, there are so many people in our demographic who probably feel ignored or even, and of course, discriminated against. I was like, you know what? Like, there's an actual market here to provide a great service and really solve a great problem,
right?
So that's kind of when I came up with the idea for NoirBnB then. So we reached out to, actually, Airbnb had reached out to us initially. Like, they wanted to offer us, like, some vouchers and discounts for future stays, but we were kind of like, look, like, this situation is a little bit bigger than that. So we told them that we would get back to them. And I think I followed up with them maybe like a week later when I had the idea. They really liked what they heard, and I think they were really trying to clear up the whole PR story as well. So they flew us out to San Francisco to their headquarters. We met with them, gave them the full pitch, and they liked the idea. But I think because things were kind of dying down, I think they were just kind of hoping that things would go away on its own. Just
right.
Kind of like, I guess kind of let the PR cycle just do what it does. So what we told them, we're like, look, guys, I mean, what happened to us wasn't an isolated case, one. And two, like, there's a lot of, I mean, like, there's a lot of stories, like, regarding discrimination on your platform. And they were just kind of like, well, yeah, we're going to make a statement. And just really kind of passive about the whole thing.
Right.
So a few months later, actually, Airbnb had come out with this study. I mean, not Airbnb, Harvard had come out with this study and said that there actually is rampant discrimination on the platform, and that black guests oftentimes get turned down and they're not able to book, and that black hosts actually make 16% less on average than white hosts do. Right, yeah. So it was just a lot of stuff like that. So we followed up with them again. We're like, hey, guys, like we weren't just saying this stuff. Like, you guys actually got a problem here that we want to solve. Mm-hmm. And they were just still very passive about it. And I think we followed up with them maybe one time. Actually, yeah. So a few months after that, after we were still trying to, like, let them know just how viable the idea was, the Airbnb While Black hashtag took off, right? Mm-hmm. So we followed up with them again, and they were just still very passive. And I said, you know what? I mean, we might as well just get out there and launch on our own. And throughout that process, I was ready to jump out there and just say, let's do our own thing. But one of my partners was like, we should wait it out and see what we could do. But really, man, like, I was ready to jump out the gate as soon as I had the idea, because I knew, one, if they're not going to solve the issue, then we might as well do it ourselves, because it doesn't make sense to,
exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So, like, that's kind of how the whole thing came about, man. But, I mean, one, the African-American spending power alone is, like, $1.3 trillion. $1.7 trillion. The African-American travel market alone is, like, a $50 billion industry. So, it just didn't make sense to us that not only would they try to solve a problem that would actually make them look good and make their company more successful, it was just the fact that they would ignore an entire demographic like that. So it just really didn't make sense.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah. So, the only option that we were left with was really just to do it on our own and provide a service that we want to see in the world.
That's legit, man. Yeah, like, that's, you know, I feel like that's how a lot of, you know, businesses in general, but specifically black businesses, are started. You know, you do things with the dominant society, and then shit breaks bad for whatever reason. And then you kind of notice, like, okay, they're filling the same exact service that's missing in our community. Why not just do a version of it for us?
So, I mean, it really just makes sense. You know what I mean? Especially, I mean, if you're gonna work within a dominant society, not saying that people shouldn't assimilate. Because I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, having a functioning cooperative society is definitely what we all want.
Right.
But at the same time, within that, if you know that there are unique needs within your community that only you can solve, that you would. Or that you would provide best, it only makes sense to do that, you know what I mean? And
right.
On top of that, if you're working within a dominant society, they're the dominant society, so for the most part, they end up kind of reaping all of the benefits of whatever you're trying to do,
exactly.
Right? So, yeah, it just makes sense to work within your community and kind of build those bonds that way.
Right, that's what's up. Dope, super dope. So, I know you talked about briefly the spending power and travel. So let's talk about some of the places that you've been to and how they were memorable for you.
I think just one, having a childhood, being born in Jamaica and having that childhood and kind of growing up there really gave me a really dope perspective. Just kind of having one, being an immigrant, but also just kind of growing up in that tropical lifestyle, like, really gave me a dope foundation. But growing up in Florida as well, love South Florida, really dope area. I think some of the dopest places I've been to, LA for sure, Los Angeles, really beautiful, incredible city, incredible town. Been to Texas a couple times for South by Southwest, really incredible city. New York City, love New York. Brooklyn, Brooklyn's like Jamaica Junior.
I got family from New York. I could do without the piss smell on the subway, but other than that, New York is dope.
Yeah, for sure, man. Lots of culture up there. DC's like my home away from home in a lot of ways. Lots of really conscious people up there. The entrepreneurial community is incredible. The creative up there, just musicians, artists, really beautiful community. A very, very black city as well. I mean, I know they're being hit with gentrification right now kind of heavily, but still very, very cultural. Love Atlanta. Atlanta's also another home away from home. My wife is actually a Spelman alumni.
So, oh, dope. Super dope.
Yeah, for sure, man. So spent a lot of time down there. Yeah, man, just a lot of cool little units. Actually, I went to New Orleans for the first time a few months ago. That's a really beautiful, incredible city, man. Really dope scene down there, too. So,
That's what's up. So why do you think it's important for black people to travel? Because it sounds like, you know, just from you talking, you know, you have a very good perspective about a lot of things, especially with, you know, you being an immigrant, you having the opportunity to travel. So why do you think it's important for black people to travel?
I mean, one, I think the most important thing is that I think the more that we travel, it kind of shows us just how small the world really, really is. I think a lot of us, we almost trick ourselves into thinking that a passport is something that's out of our reach or something that's really super expensive. And in a lot of ways, it's not to say that anybody can just go up and buy one. But I mean, if you come up with a little savings plan, you can. I mean, and on top of that, forget a savings plan. Like if you're an African American, just traveling around the country is huge enough because you can see so many different things in so many different places. So, I mean, I'd say definitely do that as a start. And a lot of times, I think sometimes people even ignore the really dope things about their own state. You know what I
mean?
Right. So I would say, yeah, man, get off the block. You know what I mean? Take a little drive with some of your homies on the weekend. Just kind of do a little road trip, man. But I think traveling, one, I mean, I think what would amaze a lot of people is the fact that in every corner of the world, like, there are black people there, or there is some kind of black history there, right? So even our co-founder, he went to Cuba a few months ago, and I asked him just what it was like, and in his exact words, he was like, yo, Cuba's a black ass country, dog. You know what I mean? So I think it's cool to just like see stuff like that. I mean, like, there's a big black population out in Thailand right now doing a lot of cool things, man. So I think it's just cool to do that, connect with each other in different spaces and see just different ways of living, different foods, you know what I mean, and stuff like that. I actually came across a study recently that said that taking a trip and traveling to someplace new is equivalent to reading 3 books, right? And yeah, and like, that actually blew my mind, but I understood it, I got it, because it's like, when you go to a new place and you're forced to kind of find out how to get around and speak to new people and try new foods and stuff like that, it changes your brain chemistry and your makeup in a lot of ways, you know what I mean? So I think just having that experience on the physical level, but also too, just really broadens your horizons and opens you up and gives you the ability to relate to new people in a lot of different ways. So I think that's one of the most important things, man. Especially right now, I feel like there's a black renaissance of sorts taking place in a lot of different ways. So I think, man, seeing the world and getting out there is definitely a major key right now.
Man, that's crazy. Like, I'm gonna have to check that study out. But, you know, yeah, it does make sense because, you know, us as melanated people, we do have the opportunity to absorb that energy. Like, we just process energy a little bit differently. So if you're going to an area, I mean, you can feel the vibe of the other people there. You can feel the vibe of the music. You can feel the vibe of the food. Yeah. You can feel the vibe of just everything that's around you. And it's a completely holistic experience. So, no, I'm definitely with you on that. That's dope. I'm going to check that study out. So 3 to 5 places that you think would be good starting points for black people to travel in the U.S. and abroad.
Oh, man. In the U.S., I think definitely some of the places I mentioned, man. Definitely take a trip to L.A., South Florida. If you haven't ever been to Miami or Fort Lauderdale, definitely take a trip down here for sure. Love D.C., love New Orleans. Austin, Texas has some of the best, like, just Tex-Mex food, like, on the planet. So definitely check that out. San Francisco is a really beautiful city. San Fran is, like, the West Coast it's like New York on the West Coast, okay. Right? So definitely San Francisco, Oakland for sure. Oakland just has a really dope black conscious vibe, lots of love out there for you. Man, dude, Oakland, man, like, I mean, that one is the birthplace of the Black Panthers for sure, but right. I mean, just so much consciousness and just good vibes and energy out there, man. So definitely do that for sure. Of course, Atlanta, off top. Around the world, I say definitely Cuba is a top of that list. London, the community out in London is very, very dope vibe. I'm trying to hit Tokyo for sure. That's one of my goals. Brazil, without a doubt. Paris, super duper lit. South Africa, okay. Lots of vibes in South Africa right now. It's really popping. My co-founder is actually Nigerian, so we're like, we kind of make a move out of Nigeria ASAP. Like, okay. So many vibes and just cool stuff going on out there. Ghana as well, lots of dope vibes in Ghana, man. So I'm probably going over 5, but yeah.
No, that's cool. No, I'm actually glad too that you referenced some places in Africa, because I feel like American blacks have like this stigma that all the cats that live in Africa are in the mud huts, you know, all the shit you see TV, man, it's crazy. So that's cool that you mentioned some places in Africa, because like, even though we always talk about, oh, we're all African, it's just like, oh, well, you ask the average person, they don't. And you're talking about destinations for like vacations and stuff, Africa isn't even at the top of their list. So
yeah,
I'm glad you referenced that. Very glad you referenced.
No, I mean, actually, like, we're actually working on a few things with a few different groups out of Africa right now, man. And like, so we got some really beautiful properties on the website of places in Africa. Like, we got some really dope places in South Africa right now that are like beautiful, that are absolutely incredible. And we got some places in Zanzibar, which is like on the east coast of Africa, like a really beautiful compound out there. Mm-hmm. Some really dope spots in Nigeria as well. So I mean, just the entire continent, you got so many beautiful places just around there, man. So I'd say definitely, man, just take that trip. It's really not that far away. It may seem like it is just I mean, from the, I guess, with the ocean or maybe culturally, but Africa is right there. It's a hop and skip, man. So
cool. All right, so let's kind of get back to the business. So what resources did you use to get Noir B&B started, as far as like research and capital? I know you talked a little bit about meeting up with the people from Airbnb, but as far as like doing the heavy lifting on your own, like, what did that look like as far as like doing the research and then having the actual capital, and, you know, like start up the website and then get all the properties together?
Well, yeah, I think the first thing as far as research goes, I mean, the main thing was really just making sure that we understood our demographic and our target market. I mean, of course, being black, we know what black people are interested in and kind of understand their experiences, but we also wanted to kind of understand some of their spending habits and the reasons why Black people travel and kind of where they go, right? So we wanted to make sure that we fully understood that as well. And then and really just figuring out new ways of how we can kind of impact the community and add value with the platform and the service that we're kind of providing. And we also kind of went back in time and we did some research and came across the Green Book and realized just how much our story kind of coincided with the Green Book. For people who may not know, the Green Book is a book that was made, I believe, in like the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so that Black people could travel, especially during the Jim Crow era, that they could find places where they could safely find lodging, find food, get gas and different stuff like that. So we kind of realized that, well, wow, I mean, one, history kind of repeats itself, but two, that we were kind of really heading in the right direction and providing a service and a real value to our people. Right. So that was cool. As far as the funding goes, the main source of income, or I guess funding, has really been from me, my co-founder, G-Day, and as well as our community investment fund. And the reason why we started up the community investment fund is because not only did we want to provide an opportunity or a platform for people of color to feel safe traveling, or Black people to feel safe traveling. But we wanted to make sure that people who believed in what we're doing actually had an avenue to really support and be a part of investing in a Black travel and technology company. So
That's cool. Yeah, no, I know you referenced the Green Book, man. The Green Book, like, I went to a Black Issues conference, about 2 months ago now. And I went to a session called Black People Traveling. They referenced the Green Book, and it was just like, man, they actually had to have a book so that you could travel and not get killed. That is insane.
Yeah,
that
man.
Is so crazy. So yeah, no, I mean, and like you said, it is funny how history kind of repeats itself, especially when, you know, you look at the Midwest, you look at the history of, like, sundown towns through that area. So the Green Book was definitely necessary at that time. So that's dope, super dope. So why do you think Black business and entrepreneurship is important? Because the average person, you know, we're taught to, you know, go to school, get a job, get a square, a little 9-to-5, and then just, you know, work the rest of your days for somebody else, making somebody else rich. So why specifically do you think Black business is important, entrepreneurship is important for the betterment of the Black community?
I mean, if we're being honest, I feel like, well, one, education is supremely important, so I would never want to, you know what I mean, down that. But I would, the first thing I would say is that, I mean, economics is probably the most important thing, you know what I mean? And it's only because, I mean, one, the economy and capitalism in general is the name of the game, right? So I feel like if you're not playing the game, then you're really only being played. That's the very first thing, right? But, I mean, every other culture, I believe Dr. Claude Anderson, he has a quote. He says that racism is a team sport, right?
Right.
And it's a very funny thing to say, but it's true in essence that a lot of other cultures or demographics or races, ethnicities, whatever it may be, they kind of work together economically, whether they know it or not. I feel like it's almost kind of been just second nature, right? And I feel like as far as we go, I mean, we just have to link up and practice more community economics and pool our resources together, and pool our money together, because that's where the source of real power is, especially in America, right? I mean, as far as the police or even government people go, like, they're not really just out looking out for people. They really look out for property
and
the overall economy. You know what I'm saying? So if you're the person who owns a variety of property or people from your community are adding value to those spaces, to these places to buy, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, if you're running that spot, you can't help but command that kind of respect. You know what I mean? In a lot of different ways. So I think it's just important for us to, one, pool our resources to not only spend money with each other and kind of help build up our communities, but also open up our own schools and open up our own hospitals and our own after school programs and educational programs and different stuff like that to really benefit ourselves. Because if we don't do it, we really can't expect anybody else to do it. Although maybe they should morally.
Right.
But at the end of the day, like, people aren't really following by those rules. So, I mean, if we're not going to do it for ourselves, we really just can't depend on anybody else to do it for us.
Right. So. No, that's absolutely true, man. And I know I see people, you know, I've seen a lot of stuff on my Facebook feed, not so much on Twitter, but where they're talking about the current administration cutting funding for after school programs. And it's just like everybody's up in arms about it. And I'm like, bruh, if you take some of that money and stop tricking it off every weekend, stop buying Jordan, stop buying dumb shit, you can have this money funneling into the community, so you can have the stuff that you need, you know? That's crazy. Like, and you referenced, you know, Claude Anderson talking about, like, racism as a team sport, and that's absolutely true. Like, especially with, I was talking about the Akai Gurley case the other day, and talking about how, like, Asians really circled their wagons. Like, Peter Liang was 100% in the wrong, but they were like, hey, we don't really care that he killed this black person unjustly. We got to figure out how we're going to protect one of our own. And they circled their wagons, circled their money, and they're like, hey, Ken Thompson, here's some change. What you going to do about this verdict? And then they're just like, hey, well, you know, he's guilty, but no jail time. And it's just like, yo, that's a lesson, man. That's a lesson for how you pool your resources and how you protect yourself economically. So, great, great, great. So, Steph, this has been an awesome interview. Really appreciate you coming on. There's been a lot of really good information. Got one last question before we let you go.
Yes, sir.
What's the biggest thing you've learned about yourself from starting your own business?
The biggest thing I learned about myself, man, I think this may be like my third or fourth business. And like, it, I think the one word that comes to mind is the one word that my homie Carmel always calls me. It's a resilient, that I'm really resilient, okay. Right? In the sense of, I mean, at the end of the day, if you're going to be an entrepreneur or you want to do anything great in your life, it's always going to take a lot of resilience and just a lot of focus and just determination and moving forward and pushing through. So I think that's definitely what I learned about myself, just that I'm, you know, I'm saying that even in the face of probably one of the biggest things that I could ever do in my life, it's just making sure that you push through, that you follow through, and that you build the best product as humanly possible, right? So I think that may be the one thing.
Man, that is excellent. Yo, if you need motivation to push on through, I know for some of y'all out there, it looks bleak when you going to work. You got to punch that clock. Are you just starting your own business? Are you just trying to get everything together? Yo, stay resilient. Steph is proof positive that resiliency works. It works. Y'all stay resilient. So, man, to close, plug anything you got going on right now. Financial endeavors. I know you got Noir B&B. Feel free to plug that. Tell us what you got going on so you can get these coins.
Man, well, to be real with you, the most important thing right now, the only, like, where all my focus is straight up Noir B&B. That's NOIRBNB.com. You can hit me up on Twitter, STEFISDOPE, Steph is dope. Instagram, same thing for Noir B&B on Twitter, on Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, everything, man. We should be launching in a couple of weeks. Hopefully by the time you hear this, we'll be up and running. See the brand new platform, come across a lot of our dope stories and a lot of dope content. So sign up with us. If you got a really dope extra room or really dope condo or home, sign up with us, list your place, and just stay tuned, man.
Steph, once again, thank you for coming on the cast, man. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate that, bro. Thank you a lot, man.
Steph, once again, thank you for coming on the show. All of Steph's information can be found in the show notes, so y'all hit the brother up if you want to get listed on the website or if you need a place to crash if you're traveling abroad. Make sure y'all also write those reviews on iTunes and on Google Play so we can get our visibility up. Next week, we'll have on Dr. Amber Thornton. She's a clinical psychologist, and she's going to be on to talk about the importance of Black mental health. So, until next time, remember, behavior is not simply an individual affair, for when multiplied by thousands, it has profound effects on the life, future existence, and well-being of the total people. As you go, so does your collective. So think better, speak better, believe better, and most importantly, do better. And until next time, I'm out. Do you like to travel? Do you have an extra room and want to make some more money? Sign up for NoirBNB.com. Noir B&B was created to become a leader in Black travel and cultural events, focusing on providing a luxury experience to an online community of travelers and tourists around the globe. The company provides users a platform to share experiences, plan trips, and learn about interesting events. Noir B&B welcomes and encourages all people to join the community. Head to NoirBNB.com today and plan your next trip. And remember, the world is yours.